This time on Weather Brains, is global warming going to boil the oceans and make Earth one big dust bowl? You sure might think so, given what we're hearing these days.
If you got a hangnail, it's global warming. They're going to skew this kind of story. What else are they skewing?
We'll bring you the thoughts of one Alabama scientist, though, who has some firm opinions about global warming.
We'll not be all dying because of global warming.
That, plus we talk about hurricanes.
I think we're definitely in a cycle where we're going to see an above normal number.
And is it really J.B. Eliot's birthday?
I didn't even get a moon pie or a buffalo rock or anything like that.
It's all coming up. Hello and welcome to Weather Brains. I'm David Black on behalf of the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama. Weather Brains is the podcast all about weather put together by a bunch of weather geeks. Weather geeks like James Spann, chief meteorologist with the ABC 3340 television affiliate in Birmingham, Alabama. Hello, Mr. Spann.
Hey, David, how are you doing?
Superb. This weather is fabulous. Enjoying it to the max, as are the other members of our crew, I believe, who we shall say hello to. First off, Mr. J.B. Elliott. Hello, sir, and happy birthday.
I was aiming to look up the word geek in the dictionary. I still don't know what it means.
We'll get there eventually. Maybe somebody will email us and tell us what they think weather geeks are.
It may be a bad word.
I don't know. But congratulations, 40. Big 4-0, is that right?
No, I'm 74 today.
How do you feel?
Like 54.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Let's say hello to Brian Peters. And I don't know, James, if we should even be talking to Brian Peters right now, because Brian is on the Alabama or the Northwest Florida Gulf Coast. So, James, what do you think? Should we let him in?
I guess so.
Brian, where are you?
I am in Miramar Beach, Florida, between Destin and Sandestin.
Do you feel guilty about not bringing us down with you?
Not one bit.
I didn't think
so. You know, Peters has that big condo on the Gulf Coast down there. You know, you'd think he'd let his friends come down there with him from time to time.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'd think the same thing. Just be common, basic decency.
It's probably one of those $1 million deals up on the, 30th floor of one of the condos at Destin down there. So.
Right. I did discover one thing this morning over breakfast, and that is, perusing one of those magazines, I can't afford any of the condos that are down here. If I probably put together every cent I could possibly scrape together, I couldn't even put a down payment down on some of these. I found one that was $3.5 million.
Well, that shouldn't be any problem for a person of your means.
Look, this guy is a TV weather guy. He's got the big government retirement checks rolling in. You know he could afford that. No problem.
Right. Who's been in weather business on television for 25 years who's making big bucks? You should let us use the weather company's Lear to fly down here.
That's not a bad idea.
How's the weather down there, Brian?
Oh, it is absolutely superb, James. We were driving around today. We is my wife and my dog. And we were driving around today, and my Jeep showed that it was 78 degrees at the warmest it got today. But we have a very, I would call it a stiff breeze. My wife would call it windy. And it's really keeps things a bit cool down here. As a matter of fact, it's about 70 or 71 out here right now. And with that breeze, it actually feels a little cool.
Is this the first time you've been down on the coast without having to deal with a hurricane in a while?
Yes. Yes.
Now are you actually outside, Brian, right now? Or are you inside?
Yes. I'm in front of a coffee company whose name I probably shouldn't mention.
He's down there stealing somebody's bandwidth, huh?
No, I'm not. No.
He does that all the time.
Stealing. They're closed. But David was mentioning that, I was in for breakfast this morning, so I patronized the business.
Okay, no problem.
I thought I might mention that I've been watching with a great deal of interest a beach reclamation project that is going on, and I found out today, and this is third-hand information, but it sounds pretty reasonable, that Walton County is doing this. They're restoring about 7 miles of beach to the tune of $24 million. And what's interesting is they've got this barge, it looks like a ship, and it goes from the Destin Pass, where it sucks up sand, into its 250,000-gallon sand holding device or whatever down in the holds of the ship, brings it down here to where we are around Miramar Beach, and then pumps it ashore. And it's absolutely fascinating to watch the bulldozer making, I don't know what you'd call them, troughs or whatever, for the water to be pumped in and for the sand to be deposited back on the beach. Absolutely fascinating. And they've been making good progress. It looks to me like since we got here on Saturday afternoon, they've made probably about I'd say about a mile's worth of progress in just a couple, 3 days.
That's fascinating.
So, yeah, it really is. You know, what are you going to do where your main business is the beach? And this gentleman that I spoke with today who's working on restoring one of the condos that was not damaged. It is on the Gulf, right immediately on the Gulf, but it was not damaged in the hurricanes, any of the hurricanes, as a matter of fact, but it lost a lot of its beach. But it was a 70s-style building, and the owners decided to go ahead and update it on the outside. But he was telling me that Dennis really did a number on the beaches all along this area, and it sure is obvious.
So it's not all about Katrina?
No, no. He was saying that, actually, and he's from Louisiana, which I thought was interesting, about 80 miles north of New Orleans. But he was saying that the erosion was the big, big problem. Wind wasn't that serious with Dennis here, in this immediate area, of course, Destin, Sandestin, Miramar Beach. But that was really interesting. And it really is dramatic when you look at where the road was. And the road has been redone. I'm assuming that there was some damage to the road as well. There's a lot of pylons and those black fences that, you know, keep the dirt from moving around as they're constructing. So there's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of evidence of other damage. And of course, it's hard to tell. I mean, this area has been impacted by three hurricanes between Ivan, Dennis, and somewhat Katrina. So it's hard to tell which one of those did the damage in this area. But I think Ivan probably did most of the wind damage, you see. And then Dennis did a lot of the erosion.
Well, we're less than 2 months from the start of the next hurricane season. You guys want to make any predictions, what your own thoughts are about what we might be in for as far as the Gulf Coast is concerned? Brian?
Well, all the experts are saying something between, I guess, around 17 or so, 17 to 19. Well, I think we're definitely in a cycle where we're going to see an above normal number. So those numbers all sound pretty reasonable to me. It's just going to depend on where they are, not how many there are, because if they all stay in the Atlantic, the Gulf Coast will think it was a weak season.
Bill Murray, you follow this with interest, too. What do you think?
Yeah, the interesting thing to me is we've got a hotel in Louisiana, south of New Orleans, and they've been sitting down for about 3 or 4 months talking about what they were going to do, and they're going to put some teeth in their mandatory evacuation plan, and they're not even going to allow us to remain open in Terrebonne Parish at all. So the hotels have to close. They have to force their guests to stay to leave, and so that's going to upset a lot of folks down there who live in the lower lying areas down around Golden Meadow and Grand Isle and those places that generally come up into Terrebonne Parish. But any hurricane, Category 3 or stronger, that's threatening that area, there's going to be a mandatory evacuation that's going to be enforced supposedly by the law. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And those folks down there are just petrified. They're just literally dreading the season beginning.
I'm assuming some people made the decision to stay last time, not having a sufficient understanding of what they were going to be going through, and maybe storms like Katrina changed some minds.
Well, it's funny because Hurricane Rita actually brought worse water damage to Terrebonne Parish than did Katrina. The winds were pretty strong in Katrina, but even though Rita was a good 125 miles west of Terrebonne Parish, they had significant storm surge flooding that overtopped a lot of the levees and things that are there for flood protection.
Well, speaking of all these hurricanes, James, do you think it's global warming causing this?
No. And I'm telling you, David, I can just see it. And I can't, every night you watch the national media, you know, that's the hot thing. These guys love global warming. Let's see, today they can, lately it's been the tornadoes
yep.
in the Midwest.
Yep.
You know, never mind that it's tornado season and these things happen every year, but it's global warming. And I know today we got a bunch of new record highs, and I guarantee you they'll be all over that. Dallas-Fort Worth today hit 101. That beat the old record of 94, pretty substantial deal there. That was back in 1913. And even here in Alabama, Muscle Shoals hit 92 today, and Mobile hit 89. Those are record highs, and I guarantee you they're going to be doing that global warming flag. But my question is, where were they in the 1930s when we had global warming? And where were they in the 1890s when we had global warming? Weather is cyclical, and to come in and state this is some man-made induced global climate change is insanity based on such a small snippet of data we're working with. And I'm very passionate about this because I feel pretty strongly about it. I like to follow the money trail. And if you look at all these research papers that are coming out involving global warming and scare tactics and doom and destruction and we're all going to die, you know, these guys depend on grant money for their own survival. That's where their money's coming from, you know, personally. So follow the money stream and use, you know, anything you hear or see or read with caution, because there's a lot of bad hype going on out there. And I think it's the reason it's, and there's no doubt it's been warmer in recent years, but I think it has something to do with the fact that the oceans are warmer, and that's part of the MDO, the multi-decade oscillation, which is a known thing, will be warm for quite a while. And then it cools down. So, you know, I am not a global warming guy.
Well, just days ago, the man considered the British government's top expert on scientific issues said projected global warming-induced temperature rises, get this, are expected to bring increases in sea level and global temperatures that would be extremely difficult for world populations to manage. Now, while various computer models have predicted annual temperature increases of between about 2.5 and more than 10 degrees by the year 2100, a British government report says an increase of just 3 degrees would put between 1.2 and 3 billion people at risk of water shortages. So, do we need to get ready for the ultimate deadly bake? Well, not according to people like Dr. John Christie. He's a professor of atmospheric science. He's director of the Earth System Science Center at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. As an atmospheric researcher, Dr. Christie has made a name for himself as someone who disagrees with much of what is currently being treated as global warming fact. We caught up with Dr. Christie at his office in Huntsville. There is so much in the news media right now about global warming, and if I were to create an analogy, it sounds to me as if you are the fish swimming upstream somewhat against everybody else. Is that a fair analogy?
Yeah, I suppose so, or I'm not swimming downstream as fast as everybody else.
What do you think is important for people to realize when they hear and read all the stories that they're consuming about global warming today?
Well, I think one thing people should realize is that when we look at the types of weather events that people really care about, the trends in those kinds of things are very ambiguous or not going in one direction or another. A number of hurricanes, a number of tornadoes, a number of floods, a number of droughts, and so on, these are all pretty much just occurring as they always have. So that's one thing I would caution them about. The other thing is that sea level rise, which has been rising for the last 20,000 years, is rising at about an inch per decade, and this is certainly a level of sea level rise I suspect we will not have too much problem dealing with. The greater problem, of course, is if you're in the unlucky place of being right where a hurricane comes in and your sea level rises 20 feet, then you really have a problem.
It seems to me, from Time Magazine to network newscasts, we're getting much the same message, and that is global warming is behind everything from melting ice caps to hurricanes. What do you say to that?
Well, I say when you look at the broad picture, it doesn't quite look that convincing. I do believe, and I do think the evidence is there to indicate a warming of the Earth's surface temperature over the last 100 years, and that warming is at least in part caused by humans and the addition of greenhouse gases. But when you look carefully at a lot of these alarmist stories, you find different results. For example, the ice caps that are promoted as melting in a few articles, other scientific papers show that they are growing. They are not melting. And so these kinds of things are uncertain, and cherry-picking your particular result does not get you to the truth of the matter.
Is there pressure, in your opinion, other than solid, sound science, is there pressure on researchers to point to global warming as responsible for a variety of planetary woes? And is this pressure economic in nature?
Well, I suppose I would say it this way, that if you come up with an alarming story, you have much greater chance of getting it published and attention brought to it, and that helps you then with your ability to get funding. Someone like me has a difficult time with those because I look in the data sets we produce and so on, and we don't see these catastrophes happening, yet it makes it very difficult to attract someone's attention to bring an agency to fund the kind of work we do. So we struggle in that department on some level.
Is it a struggle for scientists who are suggesting from their research that global warming may not be as ominous as we are being told in the mainstream media?
Oh, I think that's a fair statement, that those of us who are not in the alarmist camp have a greater difficulty in justifying the research that we do to the those that fund such research.
Is there a difference in what climate models suggest as opposed to actual historical data? The models are pretty young, are they not?
Yes, climate modeling is it's about 20 years old or so, and it has a ways to go in terms of really replicating what's happened in the past century. And when you look at climate model results, for example, I looked at 55 of them, I believe, and not a single one was able to reproduce the temperature variations that have occurred in the southeast, particularly Alabama. Every single one indicated we had warmed in the last 120 years. Whereas, in fact, the temperatures in Alabama have fallen in the last 120 years.
What about claims that the ice caps are melting, sea levels rising? What do you say to that?
Okay, the sea level is rising as it has been for the last 20,000 years. How much of that is due to ice caps is an open question. We know that the sea ice on the Arctic is melting at some rate, but that doesn't affect sea level because that ice is already floating. But Greenland and Antarctica are different stories. It's much more difficult to determine exactly how much ice is there today versus how much ice was there a year ago, and so on like that. And as I said, we've seen scientific results that point in both directions. Some say that there is slight melting in Greenland and Antarctica, increasing the sea level a tiny bit. Others say there's slight growth in both of those ice caps, decreasing the sea level rise a little bit.
Let me make sure I understand correctly. You don't dispute that global warming is happening, but you very much take issue with the widespread mass media implications that man is the sole cause. Is that right?
Yes, I don't sign up to the catastrophic role of climate change or that humans are the only cause of the warming that is occurring. And I think your listeners should be well aware of where this can go, because if you create a great alarm among people, they might clamor to have their, for example, their energy taxed so that they will use less of it. It's important to realize that energy is a real key factor in our ability to maintain health and security on many levels. And so your listeners should be aware that when you hear these calls for environmental action on global warming or something, there is an agenda inside there that seeks to decrease the development of our society, our economic development, and really to keep people where they are, which means keeping poor people poor as a result of this kind of action. So be careful.
Are we dealing with a case of hearing something so many times that we simply just begin to believe it, regardless of what sound science might suggest to this point?
Well, this is a difficult one because sound science does suggest there is a human impact on climate. Where the sound science kind of leaves is what's going to happen in the future. Is it going to be catastrophic? Are people going to die? And things like that. If we could prove that was the case, we should all be alarmed. But that is not the case. We know that people adapt very well to climates that change. We actually grow corn in Alabama, and we grow it in North Dakota. Now think about the different climates that is. I don't think we will have any trouble adapting to whatever the climate is going to throw at us, whether it's natural or human-induced or both.
I'm looking at a story on ABC News which quotes the chairman of the International Panel on Climate Change as saying last year that man's carbon emissions were reaching such concentration that, quote, immediate and very deep cuts in the pollution are needed if humanity is to survive. Your thoughts?
Someone who suggests that additional carbon dioxide in the atmosphere will extinguish the human race is just not looking at the information and not processing it well. Carbon dioxide is plant food. It is something that the entire biosphere, including human life, is based upon. Putting more of it in the atmosphere invigorates the biosphere and plants and all the processes therefrom. And warmer does not mean worse. And using more energy, the general rule is you will have a better life, a longer life, a more secure life, a healthier life. That's what electricity and energy brings to people. There is just no question about that. So someone who advocates the withdrawal of energy and the degradation of human life is someone I would just have to stand up against.
What about the recent Time magazine article on global warming? Your reaction to that?
Well, the recent Time magazine article on global warming, I did not read. I was called by the reporter a couple of times on it, and his basic, and he took many notes and wrote my responses. And then when the story came out and I was not involved in it, the basic conclusion was, well, my facts didn't fit their story. So that it was clearly an alarmist story, and Time is well known for doing such things.
What is your observation overall about the news media's coverage of global warming right now?
Well, I think the news media does what it has always done. If there's an exciting story, that's what you go with. If it bleeds, it leads. And so when you have sea levels rising catastrophically and people drowning or massive hurricanes or tornadoes coming along, well, that's the story you like to run with, and that will sell papers and magazines.
You've testified before congressional committees, have you not, about this issue?
Yes, five or six times, yes.
What has your message been to them?
My message is one that for those who are policymakers, any policy they are considering would have an effect so tiny on the whatever the climate is going to do that we could not even measure it. We're talking about proposals to limit carbon dioxide and things like that. These will not impact the amount of carbon going into the atmosphere now that we could even measure. If they want to actually reduce carbon dioxide to an amount that is measurable, in other words, the decrease would be measurable, the only method by doing that would be either catastrophic limitations on economic development or a massive nuclear power construction program. And I don't see either one of those in the future.
So what's your advice to a society that's being bombarded with these ominous-sounding stories about global warming? What do you advise people to do?
I think I would advise them to, you know, use their money wisely. You know, energy does cost money, and you could limit energy for some things. But the real message, I suppose, is that the future is going to be going to present us with some surprises about how well we can adapt to climate change, about how technology will introduce new sources of energy that don't produce carbon effects, but that regulating that into being is not the way to go. It's the way a market economy creates new sources of energy that are cheaper and don't use carbon. And so, you know, I'm basically very optimistic about the future that will not be all dying because of global warming.
We basically wanted to hear another side to this besides what people seem to be getting so much out of the mainstream media.
I suppose the key thing, though, is, yeah, I'm not swimming upstream. I'm just not swimming downstream as fast.
To be fair, we should point out that there are a number of scientists who say Dr. Christie's research is flawed. But here's a statement Dr. Christie made while testifying before a Senate Environmental Committee. This was back in May of 2001. He said, quote, "I remember as a college student at the first Earth Day being told it was a certainty that by the year 2000, the world would be starving and out of energy. Such doomsday prophecies grabbed headlines but have proven to be completely false. Similar pronouncements today about catastrophes due to human-induced climate change sound all too familiar and all too exaggerated to me as someone who actually produces and analyzes climate information." End quote. Thoughts, guys?
I think he's hitting the money, the nail right on the head.
Yeah, and it's interesting listening to Dr. Christie, David. I believe what he says is right on the money, and this guy can't buy any media time. You won't see him on ABC, you know, CBS, NBC. You know, it doesn't match the story that they're trying to tell. And what bothers me, if they're going to skew this kind of story, what else are they skewing? That's a whole different topic for some journalism show, but, you know, it's just very troubling, and I see a lot of people, especially older people, that are absolutely scared to death. They think the world's about to end because somebody on ABC News says so, and they need to be listening to a climatologist like Dr. Christie instead of some journalist with an agenda. I'm getting preachy, aren't I, JB?
Yeah, I enjoy hearing him preach. I wish
I sound like an old Southern Baptist preacher here, pointing the finger, and I got my hands waving in the air. It's great.
Yeah, I know, it's swishing the air. I wish I could sing for him while he's preaching.
Just no hallelujahs yet.
But I, too, am on Dr. Christie's side. I haven't written much about it or spoke much about it because James has been doing a real good job on that. But I just believe we need a minimum of 3,000 to 5,000 years of solid weather records to really prove some of the points some of these organizations are trying to push.
And what kills me, you know, we've got these short-term computer models that are awful, sometimes 2 days in advance, 3 days in advance, sometimes 6 hours in advance. Right. And if computer models can be so bad 6 hours in advance, these guys are using these climate models, you know, talking, you know, 25 to 50 years in advance. How in the world can you hang your hat on that? I think
no
the models
can be
are
done.
Flawed. Yeah,
and wasn't it about 300 years ago that there was almost no ice in Greenland?
Yeah, sure.
I think the bottom line is that we've just got to learn to be selective and careful about consuming information, no matter what the source.
Dr. Christie brings a good point, too, that humans are very adaptive. And as things change, I mean, you know, we're going to change with them. I mean, look at what's happened over, I mean, pick any period you want to, the last 50 years, the last 200 years, the last 1,000 years. I mean, there's been a lot of change, and I think we're going to see change. And the climate, as he pointed out in the piece I did on the Storm Alert Tour, The one thing you can be guaranteed is the climate's going to change.
And it's interesting to note that Alabama, David, used to have a citrus industry.
I heard about that. That's amazing to me.
We used to have a citrus industry down in Baldwin and Mobile counties, but we don't anymore because it's too cold. And, you know, you tell the media that, and they just get people just get so angry, and their veins bulge out on their neck, and they just want to throw something at you. I don't know why this invokes so much emotion in people. It's like some kind of religion or something. So everybody needs to take a big, deep breath and calm down and look at the facts and do your homework, and you'll see that some of this stuff is just total hype, and it's out of control.
This sort of sounds like an old saying in the journalism profession, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
A good story, that's it.
Absolutely. And James points out something good, too, there about the citrus industry. We're not talking about just a few citrus trees. We're talking about, you know, some years ago, a million or more.
And I tell you that, you know, you look at the summers here in this state, and as Dr. Christie has pointed out in Brian's story on television on the Storm Alert Tour this year, our summers have been so much cooler in recent decades. You just don't see that many 100s anymore. We used to have them all the time. And, you know, it's just a cyclical kind of thing. But now everybody's got this on their minds. So every time there's a tornado, there's a hurricane, you know, something, it's going to be global warming. You know, if you got a hangnail, it's global warming. And this stuff will calm down, and they'll get on some other bandwagon in the years to come. But for now, we're probably stuck with this for a few more years.
Hasn't the Pacific been relatively quiet this year, this past year, 2005 on hurricanes and typhoons?
Yeah, they hardly had any activity out in the Pacific Basin. But you won't hear that from the media.
I just saw, though, where there's one going on off the northwest coast of Australia.
Yeah, they had Larry moved inland into northeast Australia, major storm. Did you guys also see that the National Hurricane Center added another subtropical storm to the 2005 list way out in the Azores? It briefly became tropical storm strength and faded the next day, but they counted it as number 28.
Wow. Yeah, I was looking at Bill Gray's forecast for this year, kind of drifting back to hurricanes. He's got I think this guy is absolutely brilliant. I didn't know much about him for a while, but I did some research and started listening to him and reading his papers, and I think William Gray is just all over it. If you want to talk global warming, listen to what he has to say. And, you know, nobody will let him talk because he doesn't, you know, go with a media tune here. But, you know, I was looking at his forecast. He's forecasting 9 hurricanes for 2006, and of those, 5 intense hurricanes. And, you know, he also gives these probabilities, which are pretty interesting. The probability of at least one major hurricane landfall on the entire U.S. coastline is 80%. So, you know, 8 in 10 odds, you'll have at least one major hurricane. And the question is, where are these things going to recurve? Are they going to recurve out in the Atlantic? I think Brian mentioned this earlier. Will they recurve up the East Coast? Will they recurve in the Gulf? And nobody knows that until these things get out there and aboard.
Well, it's fascinating to look at, and jumping back and forth as we are anyway on the global warming issue, I just hope that for folks listening to our podcasts that they understand that our intent here is just to help point out that there are other sides to this issue, and when you hear something that's really presented in a factual, credible context in the news media today, you've still got to be careful.
Maybe we could get Dr. Gray on a future Weather Brains.
Yeah, he's great. And, you know, I got a piece of hate mail the other day from a global warming guy. Said every meteorologist in the country has now agreed that global warming, man-made global warming, is real and it's catastrophic. And I said, look, I'm in the business. I can't find one person that agrees with a global warming line. In terms of operational meteorologists, I'm sure there's out there, and I would welcome them to join us, you know, come share your point of view. This guy was convinced every single meteorologist in the country has agreed that man-made global warming is real and, you know, destruction is coming on the Earth. And where's he getting that? I don't watch a lot of national TV news. I guess I need to.
Well, it's a known fact, James, that meteorologists such as yourself and Brian are receiving secret payments from the grocery store chains during winter storm events. So, you know.
Sure, how'd you know that?
Milk and bread fund, huh?
Sure.
It allows you to go to the coast on vacation is what it allows.
The James and Brian retirement fund, yeah. I'll be funding my Disney World trip with that money this year.
Well, speaking of people responding to us, we did get some email from a WeatherBrains listener I thought I'd touch on from one of our previous podcasts. In our previous podcast, we talked about the April 7th and 8th, 2006 severe weather event. And Brian, you were making some discussions about these issues too, as far as closing schools well in advance of a forecast severe weather event. We got email from Matt McCracken in Hamilton, Alabama, and he writes, and I quote, "The person making the decision is an elected official, in most cases the county superintendent of education. Second, Brian hit right on. There is a horrible fear that something will happen to the kids while they are at school or on a bus. I think the thought process is, what if Carbon Hill Elementary had been full of kids in November 2002? I understand that was on a Sunday and late in the evening. Living in Marion County, where there are a lot of mobile homes, I also believe kids should be allowed to stay in school. That is why, in most cases, not April 7th, Marion County's superintendent says if you want to come get your child from school and feel better and or safer doing that, then the absence will not count against them. We will have the school doors open for those who do not have a safe place to go. And quite frankly, that could include many of the teachers. Working with him over the past 4 years, the only time I have seen him close up is if the thought process contains information which leads him to believe the storms could be in our area while the buses are running. The National Weather Service, who told us all day that we would be under the gun from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., is the main but not sole source of weather information our county and city school systems use. Ultimately, the decision is in their hands, and I know it is not made lightly. However, they are elected, and that means that if people don't like you, they don't vote for you. So we seem to get the chain reaction. When one person or system pulls the trigger on a closing, guess what? Here come the others to fall in line." Thanks for the email, Matt.
JB.
Sir.
What'd you get for your birthday today?
Hours and hours of working on income tax.
Wow.
Mm. Boy.
I could think of a better present than that.
I didn't even get a moon pie or a buffalo rock or anything like that.
You should have one for your birthday.
We're going to get this guy a fresh supply of donuts, Pop-Tarts, and buffalo rock shipped out to his palace in Trustful sometime this week.
Absolutely. I'd love to have him.
Well, happy birthday again to JB and Brian. I just... think you're disgusting being on the coast enjoying yourself. That's all I can say.
He may stay down there for 2 or 3 months.
Oh,
I noticed Brian's not really specific on what kind of joint he's hanging out there. You know, that internet, that Wi-Fi deal. I think it's a Hooters down there. You know, Brian has been, he's been well known for doing these weather live shots in those Hooters parking lots.
And he just kind of disappears sometimes at odd times.
Yeah. So notice on the podcast, he's just gone. I mean, where did he go? I mean,
he's probably gotten, we'll just say, distracted.
He likes the wings in there. That's what he always says.
A reminder that the opinions expressed here on Weather Brains are strictly those of the speaker and are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. If you'd like to contact us, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. For James Spann, J.B. Elliott, Brian Peters, and Bill Murray, I'm David Black. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time for more Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright 2006, all rights reserved. Adios.